Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
You know, Mark, there is never a dull moment in EB5. And this year we are getting surprise after surprise. I don't even think the term breaking news is making any sense anymore.
When there's a drastic change almost every week, which change is more drastic, right?
Right. Well, this week we had big news for anybody within the industry, because this week the big news was the State Department's announcement of the December visa bulletin, which left or which will leave every single country current. That's huge, because for the last few years, we've been looking at 10 to 15 year backlogs for China and 4 to 7 year backlogs for Vietnam.
So what does this mean? What's this essentially going to change for those of us that don't understand the backlogs of 7 years, 10 years? What would that mean for the investors?
Well, we're going to talk about it on this podcast, along with a number of other issues which have jumped up from this. And we thought that one of the best people to speak on this topic was Matt Gordon.
Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Mark and Mona. I appreciate the opportunity to be part of this.
Matt, you've been in this industry a long time also, and you remember the day, right, when all EB-5, I would say almost 90% of EB-5 was China and Vietnam.
For sure.
Mona, I remember when we first started the show about 6 years ago, most of our listenership was in China.
That's right. And we actually have some Chinese podcasts. There were your mine, which were just translated.
Right.
I know. Matt, timing is everything. This week's announcement, what do you see? How do you see that this change, let's start with, affecting the Chinese and Vietnamese investors?
Well, it's pretty profound if you think about it, because many Chinese and Vietnamese in the run-up to the rule change in 2019 rushed to get their petitions, and many hundreds, if not thousands, did so. And by the time the dust settles, they realized, you know, through their counsel, that their wait time, because of the retrogression and the oversubscription to the EB-5 category from those from China and Vietnam, could be, as you mentioned, you know, a decade or longer in the Chinese case, or near so in the Vietnamese case. Now, all of a sudden, the State Department says, step right up to the window, your turn has come. So those people who still might have been expecting many, many years of delay, and we're talking people even with approved green card petitions, I-526 petitions, now, instead of years of delay, they can begin their consular or adjustment of status process.
Do you know, Rebecca's not on this show, but she will tell you how just about 3 or 4 months ago, she spoke with one of our investors from one of the direct pool programs we had, who was so frustrated and she was ready to leave. And I think Rebecca said, you know, there's so much happening nowadays. Prophetic words, by the way, Mark. She said, there's so much happening. Why don't you just hold on for at least another year till we know what's going on with the program? And that lady, I cannot tell you, when we called her yesterday to tell her she was current, she did not have to wait 10 whole years. She was ecstatic.
And Mona, you make a great distinction in that it's direct investors, because many of the, and if not most of the investors historically, had come through the regional center program. And one of the big breaking news of the year, you know, before this, was that the regional center program was not reauthorized. So it's currently terminated. So this benefit accrues only to those investors who came through direct projects.
Right. Well, we consistently had direct pooled projects, actually, over the years. But at this point, if you actually ask us how many people in our office are going to avail the fact that the visas are current, probably around 20 to 26. Whereas if it was a regional center, that situation, then we're talking about adding a couple of zeros. So it is a huge difference.
Yeah, for sure.
So, Matt, do you feel that as we're talking only about direct petitions, this would also indicate that a number of the Chinese agents would be jumping up and trying to bring in more investors?
Well, I think the agent market will jump up initially, but what they'll find is a very different market from when they last interacted, you know, primarily in the pre-2019, mostly because the supply-demand dynamic has completely inverted. So if we look back to pre-2019, you had a very large number of project sponsors, 95% of which were on the regional center side, with literally the capacity to take many, many thousands of investors. And relative to that, there was fewer investors interested than there were available sponsors to take them. So the investors were the scarce resource, and then the agents could demand a king's ransom in order to steer the scarcity towards the project. Today, it's exactly inverted. So you still have demand, and if anything, the demand is pent up over the last couple of years. But at the same time, all of the regional centers are gone. They're out of the market. And the number of direct projects and the slots within each project are relatively few. So now you have many investors chasing relatively few slots. And right. So the projects can pick and choose, and they don't really need to pay the agents that much in order to find investors.
You know, you're absolutely right, because I was on a call with a Vietnamese investment group recently. And when I talked to the project developers and told them how much interest and how much back payments and all of that stuff that the agents wanted, the project developers, we don't want them to tell them to go away. And that never, ever happened before.
No, for sure. And also just look at the world from the perspective of the developer. You now have single digit interest rates and tons of capital flowing around the system. I mean, if you were a sponsor today, would you rather just go to a financial institution and take a loan and be done with it? Or would you want to have to spend the hundreds of thousands of dollars to set up everything to support EB-5 investors and then have the added compliance burdens and potential liability compared to just doing a simple loan?
Maybe. Here I'll differ, because I beg to differ. There are many projects that we work with who can't get loans or would only get loans in double digits because of the nature of the industry. Smaller projects as well. You know, there are projects out there who really would benefit from EB-5. So they are ready to give the interest rate that they would normally have given the agent. That's the big difference that I see. The investor is taking home the interest rather than the agent.
Sure. And I agree with you, but you're saying the same thing. Those sponsors who could generate larger projects and larger number of projects, which would increase the demand for investors, they're the ones that have access to the traditional financing and lower interest rate bank loans. It's the smaller projects and the ones that just generally won't qualify for those, you know, low interest rates that are the ones that are going to be in the EB-5 market. And there's nothing wrong with these projects. We both work with them. They're just not pumping out, you know, 100 or 200 investment slots per project. They might pump out 3 or 5, maybe 10 for a very large one. So it's that much smaller supply of investment slots relative to the demand that I'm sure will start cropping up in China and Vietnam, not only because of the category being current, but it also interacts with the recent Baring case, which invalidated the 2019 rule, which increased the minimum investment amounts quite dramatically, are now reset back to the 2019 level, where effectively all projects can sell at the 500,000 investment level.
You know, Matt, you just recently wrote a very interesting article, which was out on this area. And I found it intriguing because I think you're one of the few writers out there who see matters in a much more comprehensive way. One of being that you're not that confident of the regional center program coming back that quickly. And the longer it's out, I think the more change you envisage within the system.
Yeah, I absolutely feel that way. I'm probably in the minority who believes that the regional center has less than a 50-50 chance of getting reauthorized. And I really look at it from a framework of a political economy, because now the large regional center sponsors are out of the market. And really, because of the twofold impact of the increased minimum investment amounts that started in 2019, and the fact that a large proportion of the demand from China and Vietnam left the market because of the extended wait times that you just, you know, described. So the investment flows fell off dramatically. And at the same time, the alternative interest rates that these large sponsors could have decreased. So they kind of moved on. It was the shiny toy, then it became opportunity zones, and they're on to their next form of financing. So at the same time, they've taken their capital, which used to support the lobbyists and the whole ecosystem, and that's gone too. So who's going to go in front of the members of Congress and the members of Senate and say, we want this, we demand this? There's always those voices in the trade association, IAUSA, they're going to say for it. But why would they want this anymore? They've just moved on. So there's no more of that political force that's going to drive the change.
Yeah, that's a very interesting viewpoint. And there's another effect that I see. This is the first time ever we've seen a different time for direct versus regional center. And if the regional center program does not come back for a long period of time, it's going to obviously encourage Chinese, Vietnamese investors to come on board. Because if I was a Chinese investor, first of all, I would be very hesitant on jumping into a new project right now, because if the regional center program came back in 3 months, I would be now behind, again, the people who have already been there, and we're looking at a 17-year backlog or 16-year backlog. But at the same time, if there's an opportunity that perhaps we will not get the program back for another 6 months or maybe another year, as you have suggested, then you know what? I might get my petition in. I might actually be able to avail the EB-5 program.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And it really might be sliding in the window while it's open type of scenario, because right now, 95% of the backlog has been removed. That was the traditional ratio of regional center versus direct petitions. So the USCIS used to adjudicate somewhere around 2,000 to 3,000 petitions a year. Well, if you kind of run the math, they should have already had enough time to adjudicate the entire historical backlog of direct petitions. The agency has already said that they are no longer processing regional center-based I-526 petitions. So they slid those over to the side. They are not rejecting them, they're not returning them, but they're not acting on them. So these adjudicators, one would presume, could spend their time adjudicating the current backlog, and that would be the historical direct petitions. And then, as we discussed, there's a relatively smaller number of new direct petitions coming in. So we might return to the really old days, if you remember, nearly a decade ago, when petitions were routinely adjudicated in under 6 months. And that might be the opportunity for investors to get in before that whole backlog comes back, if the regional center program is reauthorized, say, for example, in a year's time.
Yeah, well, you know, this is a subject for another podcast, but I have to say that the only disadvantage is, and I've spoken to many developers, is sustaining good projects at the 500 level. At the 900 or a higher level, they can do, but at the 500,000 level, the 10 employees requirement is difficult. That's where the regional center model really worked.
Well, for sure. And that's why it was created. But there's nothing to inspire creativity like entrepreneurialism. So we're currently working with a couple of projects that actually do meet the ratios. And frankly, we could probably scale those up to where they could take in a total of somewhere between 100 and 300 investors. So now, that used to be one medium-sized project in EB-5. And for this company, that's where all cylinders are clicking. But they can do it, and it works, and they have the right labor to capital creation, right capital creation to labor ratio. So it works. The math works. It will change EB-5 fundamentally from a large project real estate finance tool to something else. That doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. It just means it's different.
I couldn't agree more, because I'm one of these people who've been arguing for the small player for the longest time. I do believe that EB-5 was meant for the smaller players and not for the large, huge conglomerates that we've seen taking over. And I think that Senator Leahy and Senator Grassley had that in mind too. But you know what? We're losing both Senator Leahy and Senator Grassley. So we don't know where this is headed.
Well, again, that's more uncertainty about what historically has been the regional center program. But if you recall, the EB-5 program, when it at its roots, at its beginning, was really about immigrant entrepreneurs. And it was supposed to be the actual immigrant who was creating the jobs and building the business. And the EB-5 program went about as far away as possible from those original historical underpinnings. And this is sort of returning EB-5, maybe not to the point where the immigrant himself himself or herself as the entrepreneur, but it is more directly financing and assisting what you'd consider more entrepreneurial type businesses to have capital they need to prosper.
All right. Going back to the adjudication and the speed of adjudications, Matt, USCIS for the last few years have been using a policy of not first in, first out, but to retain the Chinese cases so that they haven't been adjudicated when all of the other investors in that particular project have been. Are you aware if USCIS is changing that policy?
They did announce that they went from what you mentioned, which is FIFO, first in, first out. I think it was a good couple of years ago, to where they said they will adjudicate cases FIFO only if the visa category for that person is current. Because what's the point of adjudicating it?
2017, 2018 when they did
that. Yeah, time flies, 3-4 years already. So they've moved it. But now with the December visa bulletin, since everybody is current, then everybody, including the Chinese and Vietnamese historically unprocessed cases, are now in the process pool. So it kind of resets it where the policy is almost back to FIFO because there's no more uncurrent categories.
Well, Matt, I think you fully explored what people that have approved I-526 should do, but what about others, people that have a new I-526?
Mark, that's a great question, and Mona and I touched on it a little bit in terms of the risk calculus that a prospective investor needs to go through in thinking, should I start the process now? What's the timing? What are the considerations? So if you're in my camp and you believe the regional center program is not going to be reauthorized very, very soon, then it might very well be worth your while to start the process because of that window I mentioned previously. So if there is a good 6 months to a year, you know, or even longer, you can get that petition in, it can get adjudicated, and you can get your consular appointment or your adjustment of status started in, you're in. You're going to get your green card before the ugly face of retrogression rears itself again if regional center reauthorization happens. So, you know, we're all playing crystal ball polishing with this. We don't know what the future will be. Some people speculate the regional center program could be reauthorized as early as February. That comes about because historically, the reauthorizations happened as part of the budgetary process. But this time, it's different. And the reason it's different is that the immigration legislation has been decoupled from the budgetary process. So there would need to be some force to push it back in so that way they get picked up again.
Essentially, that political inertia, it stops. So you need an extra force to get it rolling again because of that decoupling.
I would argue, though, here that perhaps this is an incentive for somebody like Senator Schumer to get his marching orders, because if there's a possibility that we're going to run without the regional center program at all, then people might put the pressure on him. Because right now we know that Senator Schumer does really represent the large real estate sort of people here in New York City.
It's a good point, but let's look at their interests. The large real estate developers were basically shut out of EB-5 because of the 2019 rules targeted employment area reform. In the old days, you could gerrymander TEAs, everyone fit in, everyone got the benefit of the lowest investment amount.
But yeah, people never cease to be amazed how entire Manhattan could be gerrymandered.
Yeah, I mean,
never
you know,
that.
You know, it's not so hard when you can have a 100-mile long TEA like they did in Dallas. So, but those were the rules, and people will use the rules to their fullest. But under the post-2019 TEA regime, you really couldn't gerrymander it. It was locked down pretty tight. So all the large developers were essentially priced to the 1.8 million level where everyone else was 50%. So if you think about reauthorization, what's in it for the large New York State real estate developers? Absolutely nothing, because this is what happens. If the regional center law is reauthorized, then as we know, Director of Homeland Security, you know, Head Mayorkas, will then issue a new notice of final rule to pick up on the 2019 rule where the court said they should have left off. And at that point, we would expect within 60 days of reauthorization, the 2019 rule to come back. He can't do it now because too much of the rule applies to a law that no longer exists. So if he wanted to try it again, he would have to go all the way to the beginning of the process, which is probably at least 5 years. So they can't reissue the rule quickly without regional center reauthorization. So there's a lower investment amount now, but that's a really long-winded way of saying Senator Schumer's chief constituents don't want an EB-5 program or a regional center program without reformation to where their projects come in. And then you say, well, the rural markets and small urban markets don't want that because they could never compete with the large urban developers. And that's why the EB-5 reform has been at loggerheads for the last 5 to 7 years. And so I don't see Senator Schumer getting on board with it because he can't get the rural and the small markets on board with it. And so we're at gridlock. And the larger developers, frankly, would rather no regional center program rather than a program which allows their smaller competitors to have a decisive advantage.
You know, that's such a cynical way of looking at it, though, that if I can't play in the sandbox, I'm going to make sure all the sand is polluted and no one else can play there.
Wait, we're talking about U.S. politics, so cynicism is well warranted, unfortunately. My goodness.
You know, I have to say that these are just our views, our opinions for all of our listeners. There are plenty of people out there who will love to disagree, but who is being advised by lobbyists, and lobbyists make money from giving you positive versions of events. So there is room for cynicism. I do agree.
Yeah, for sure. What would be great is if the industry could get together and a new EB-5 legislation could be composed, which addresses all the constituencies, the different markets, and the industry could move forward, because it would be better for a program to have $2 or $3 billion a year than $300 or $400 million. But it's not moving in that direction without the parties coming together and finding enough for everyone.
Well, there is that legislation which is being put forward by Senator Rand Paul and Senator Lindsey Graham. That kind of addresses everybody, because there they have the TEA has been addressed and the minimum amount is at $7 or $7.50, I believe.
Right. But again, I just cannot imagine in this political climate where standalone immigration legislation moves forward. It's too radioactive, and on the Republican side, to support anything that someone could point their finger at as pro-immigration is dangerous. And what's their benefit from it? Because they could just as easily ignore a program. I mean, they've just been fighting over a $1.5 trillion infrastructure stimulus. We're talking about a program that at its best days was a few billion. It's rounding error, and I don't see them investing the political capital in this.
Well, going back to the Chinese agents, though, where one would normally turn to if you wanted to get any investor out of China, I think they're going to not like the new system if this is going to be the new system, because what they are going to see is they're not going to be able to make the same kind of capital, which we touched on before. But at the same time, the projects, the type of projects, they just don't understand this whole system. They have to relearn everything. And so many of the bigger agents have moved out of the U.S. market altogether.
I agree. But again, that's where competition will come in. So those agents are not going to be willing to deliver investors for the amount of compensation the projects are willing to pay. But I would almost guarantee you new agents will spring up and find the deal palatable, and the market will shift. It always does.
But you know, Matt, there is one thing which does worry me. There is a panic in the air, for sure, because people don't know. There is this uncertainty as to how much time we have, how much time the amount will remain at 500,000 before it becomes higher. So what we are seeing consistently are bad projects, not necessarily bad businesses, but badly structured projects, where the project's not structured correctly. They haven't gone into the project itself. Should be a regional center project and not a direct project. Or the lawyer has structured it as a regional center and sort of added in the direct component.
Yeah, those are tricky. I think our final note can be, you know, time matters, but you never have time to get it wrong. So just make sure you work with good professionals who know what they're doing, because there is time to get it done right. You know, it's in two categories. Those with existing petitions should definitely be moving quite urgently. And those who are considering it should be moving urgently as well, but not at such a speed where they're going to make mistakes, because then they will not be happy with the result in the end.
That's excellent advice. Stay tuned. Who knows what's going to happen next week?
Oh, my gosh. Matt Gordon, thank you so much for joining Mona and I here on EB-5 Investment Voice and providing your insight on this most recent news.
Well, Mark, Mona, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you both today. I mean, it really has been a profound period in the last 4 months in EB5 between the Baring case, the regional center termination, and then just most recently the State Department making the whole world current. It's nonstop action, which had been a very sleepy little sector for the last couple of years since the 2019 rule change. So it's been exciting times. I thank you for the opportunity to share some of my viewpoints with people.
It's been great having you.
Thanks, Matt. Always a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw and Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.